Ever wonder the true power of sports? Well, you come to the right place. Welcome to the Sports for Social Impact podcast. I'm David Thibodeau, and I believe that by exploring the intersection between sport and society, we can better leverage the sport industry for maximum impact. We explore what sport's true power is to understand the impacts on and the impacts of sports on society. Join me as we learn how sports can influence important policy areas such as the environment, transportation, education, and so much more. Anton is committed to promoting sustainability in professional and grassroots sports. He does this as the coordinator for sustainability and inclusion at FC International Berlin, with the first sustainably certified amateur club in Germany. In addition, he is a consultant for sports and fair trade at the Action Alliance in Berlin and advises sport clubs, sport associations, politics, and administrations in the area of consumption and production. Within the campaign of sport and fair trade, he offers networking opportunities and thematic training, for example, on fair procurement and climate communication in sports. So Anton was really the perfect guest to have on to talk about sport and fair trade and what this means in the context of sport. So he has a really great understanding of what it means to look at the whole picture of the supply chain and what's going on in sports and how sports can contribute to a fairer approach, including considerations for both social and environmental aspects. We don't often think about where our sporting equipment comes from. I think generally the sport industry is thinking about sustainability in terms of environmental impacts. So I think that perspective is there, but not entirely the social considerations in terms of procurement. I really haven't heard that many sport organizations talking about that part. So it was interesting to hear Anton talk about some of the examples of where sport organizations in Germany are taking those first steps in the space, these very important first steps. And, the more we talk about it, the more that sport does this, it educates people on the importance of this and educates people on how we can do this in every sector. Overall, I think it was a really great conversation about fair trade and where it intersects with sport and how sport can take action. We often talk about on this podcast about how sport itself has the power to change, to change lives through uplifting and empowering different communities. But that's with, sport programs specifically. And so we've never really pulled on the thread of the procurement power of sports. And I think it was really interesting to talk about with Anton. So I think this was a really worthwhile conversation to have. And I think I personally learned a lot, and I hope everybody listening does too. So welcome today to my guest, Anton Chalewski. I probably totally just butchered your name right after you told me how to pronounce it properly. But so Anton is a sport and fair trade consultant. Thank you so much, Anton, for coming on the podcast. I'll turn it over to you to introduce yourself and, the many different hats that you wear. And we can talk about sort of the organizations that you're involved with and really get into the conversation about sport and fair trade. So over to you.
Yes, thank you very much, David, and hello to all of our listeners. My name is Anton, and I'm 29 years old. I have a bachelor and a master degree in sport management, which I did in Potsdam and also in Bordeaux. I focused pretty early in my master on sustainability in European sports, and then started my career in sports voluntarily at my club FC Nationale in Berlin. But this is only one of the few hats that I'm wearing. Another one is at the Action Alliance Fair Trade Berlin. That's why we're also here in the podcast talking about the specific field of sustainability, which is procurement or fair trade. And I'm also part of the nationwide campaign Sport Trades Fair, which is a German-wide collaboration of organizations, of NGOs, but also of municipalities, looking on how we can make this field more sustainable in general.
Awesome. Yeah. So, we've talked a lot about on the podcast sustainability and sports and stuff, but we haven't really gotten into the whole idea of procurement and supply chains for sports. So I think it's really interesting that that there's this organization working on this specifically. So which is, really why I wanted to have you on the podcast to really explore that a little bit more and to talk about it and to sort of, you know, pull it apart and really, you know, so that we can really take a look at it and how it does impact sports, because often sometimes, you know, people don't, you know, obviously I think, you know, people think about fair trade. That's the thing that most comes in mind for me would be, you know, food, right? I see it all the time at, you know, at Starbucks and things like that. You know, their coffee is fair trade. So I guess, so what does fair trade mean in sport? Like, what would that mean at, you know, from your perspective and with your, the work that you're doing, what does fair trade mean in the sport industry and world?
Yes, fair question. Let me still start a little bit from the beginning, because I think you have to differentiate between two wordings when it comes to fair trade. On the one hand, and this is what you mentioned with Starbucks or coffee, for example, it's one of the most recognized and maybe also trusted, hopefully, sustainability labels in the world. You can see that if you know the fair trade or the International Fair Trade Organization, but there are also other organizations such in Germany, which is called the GEPA, which is also a fair trade company. It's an alternative trading organization, so to say. And just in short, a theory, it basically tries to enable a fairer price for goods on the one hand, but also tries to invest in the education and also in the people itself, in the whole supply chain, you know, when you have a local level of production. And this is the one concept. And on the other hand, fair trade in general, the label fair trade is just, yeah, another concept for more equal, I would say, economy, society, which is based on mutual respect, differentiating between the so-called third world or global south and the global north, but basically working hand in hand together to make progress in this field. And to become now more specific, what it means to the sporting field, well, it can mean a lot of things. You can check on the pitch, for example, when it comes to clothing, to merch, but also to merchandise off the pitch. The ball, where does it come from? How was it produced? The material of the jerseys. We are not looking too much into the ecological aspect here, because this is, there are a lot of organizations who are checking that out. You know, we have the discussion about recycled materials, closed loops, all of that, cradle to cradle. This is all the ecological part of the product. We are basically looking at the social aspect. How are the people treated in the supply chain? Is there a transparent supply chain overall? And when it comes to the organization Sport Trades Fair, to become even more specific, we have there four different levels how we work together. We have one working group, which is the intensive working group, so to say, so who are looking at the strategy and how we can enable more organizations German-wide to, yeah, have these principles in mind, for example, through guidelines, through sharing best practice, through workshops, etc. But we also have a working group which looks into the educational aspect, because a lot of people don't know that this is a problem in the first place. They know that the ecological crisis is there, but that the social crisis is very pretty much linked to it is another topic that needs to come into mind. But also we are looking into the core groups, so non-professional sports on the one hand side, where we have currently 12 episode digital workshop series on how, yeah, clubs can be more sustainable. And also the last one is the perspective on the professional field, because you might think that just because the name professional is in there, that all of those clubs in the professional leagues, football, handball, basketball, are looking into this. Unfortunately not. Unfortunately, a lot of them are already overworked and overwhelmed with the current system and merchandise and procurement, etc. So for them, also the concept of fair trade and ecological social procurement is kind of new. So this is basically the roundup of all the different angles that I, but also we, are trying to look into Germany, and hopefully also other organizations are doing that in other countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess my question is, how do you engage, or how do you approach organizations to become part of this movement, right? Because, you know, as you were talking about, some of the organizations, you may look at this and not be scared, but like be nervous about undertaking this, because they don't know what it means. They don't know what it looks like. So they don't know how to work on it. So they will be hesitant to joining these kind of groups, these kind of associations. So how do you approach, you know, new members? How do you bring people into this conversation? How do you reach out to sport organizations and talk to them about this to show them that it's, yeah, you know, it is, you know, it is a really big topic, but that is, you know, maybe not that scary as they thought it was.
Yeah, definitely a good question, because I'm faced with that question a lot. I also tried already a few strategies on how to start the conversation. And basically, when you start the conversation, you face normally three main barriers, which is mostly price. So it's more expensive. So conversation over for a lot of sports clubs who already are handling a very tight budget. You have the resources. No one has actually time. They're already overwhelmed with their current voluntary status. And also they have a little gap of information. So sometimes they think fair trade is actually ecological. So you need to update them and enable them actually to understand the whole process. So what I do with these three main barriers, I try to give them as much information, as much material as possible. For example, we've made a survey in Berlin to understand why sports clubs are hesitating about this. And these three barriers came out. So we tried with helping them, with enabling them to get a procurement guide, which they only have to sign with their board. And so they have exactly the criteria that are needed in order to ask your supplier that they want a social and also biologically ecological jersey, ball, etc. So this is the first, like the guidelines we already wrote for them. We also made the work of several months to have like a whole product list from tested products that we list, even though we don't sell them, but we list them as recommendations. So they save the time and they save, you know, the internet research, which took us months to see which products are on the market. And then obviously when they have the knowledge and also know where to find these products, then comes the discussion on the price. And we have a very favorable position here in Berlin, I can say, because the local sports federation has a funding program. So if you are looking into fair trade goods in the sporting market, you can get up to 50% off through a project grant. And obviously this is the perfect conversation starter, because you give them all the material, you can say this is your first sustainability project, you even save 50% off, maybe having sort of good conversation with your treasurer, because normally this is the stakeholder which is mostly interested in the sustainability criteria. And then, you know, we give them information and we try to update them regularly on a roundtable sustainability that I also enabled last year, which has already taken place seven times so far, and the eighth one is just coming up. So you see, we try to face these barriers very openly and give them all they might need and might ask for, so they only have no other choice than basically changing for good or for better. And so far the response are pretty good for it. Of course, the biggest problem is to get the dissemination rolling. So that's why I'm also talking with more federations on the Berlin level, but also on the sporting precise level. For example, the Handball Federation here in Berlin, the Volleyball Federation, the Badminton Federation, that they also put these materials on the website, that they talk openly with the clubs in order to get this conversation started, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. So So the way that you present this, and you kind of come forward with these ready made documents that have all these things outlined, I think it's a really great approach, and makes it so easy and simple for these organizations to look at and say, everything's here already. all the work has been pretty much done. I can, this is a really great document to start off with and sort of continue, and they can take it upon themselves to develop further and do more research after they have these beginning steps already laid out for them pretty clearly. So when you're talking there, you also kind of talked a little bit about, and maybe I'm misunderstanding, but you're very focused on sort of like the city level right now, like more local clubs and things in Berlin rather than national.
So I have two focuses. As I mentioned, I'm once working for the Action Alliance for Fair Trade in Berlin. So this is my main responsibility. So right. I'm overlooking the Berlin activities and organizing workshops there, but also with the nationwide campaign, Sport Trades Fair, with the four working groups, we're working on a national level. So I'm also in contact with clubs in Cologne or in Bavaria or right. in the okay. north, where I just conducted the workshop. So I have a pretty good overview what's possible and also what's not possible, I would say, across Germany. And of course, all our activities are always aligned to the biggest dissemination possible. So every material we produce in Berlin or we produce in Leipzig or in Hamburg, we put on the website, we post on social media, so that all clubs in Germany are actually benefiting from it.
Okay. So maybe do you want to talk a little bit more about those two organizations that you're involved with a little bit more? Because I know you've done some specific activations and projects with them. So I don't know if you want to highlight anything specifically. I think you mentioned something about you developed a a map of Berlin. So I don't know if you want to talk about that a little bit and some of the work some of that work.
Yeah, sure. So when we have the Berlin focus, once again, I'm talking about the Action Alliance of Fair Trade. It's like really an association for everyone who wants to become involved. It's for civil society, but also for economical or business partners or administration also in Berlin. And basically, we just give the area, the ground, and we enable them with our materials, with our knowledge, with our networking to become the best version and to create the best practice examples themselves. So what we are also, and what you mentioned, asking from them is getting good examples and trying to put them on the map. So we have a fair city map by, for example, in Berlin, where you can search for catering providers, you can search for coffee places, for bars also, but even sports club and other facilities are listed in there now if they fulfill the criteria, which is normally 2 to 3 different products and commitment for especially fair trade, but also a general ecological procurement, etc. So this is, I think, the very great start, a go-to point in Berlin on our website to check if you're looking for a fairer production line whatsoever. I think this is one of the coolest pieces that we have created so far. Maybe give you another example directly from the sporting world, because I also mentioned that I'm working for FC Internationale Berlin, which is the first sustainability certified sports club in Germany, actually, which it became in 2021. And there we also did something very unique last year. We started to make an open tender for our merchandise and for our kit and jerseys. So for the first time, those big suppliers or production companies, they had to write us, they had to show their concepts on how they want to make our new jerseys, our new kits, maybe even our new balls for the upcoming season. And we basically rated them also with social and ecological criteria in mind. So the final result was not only economical, but also with 30% aligned to social and ecological parts. So this is one of the biggest steps that we also try to give to other clubs, that we can showcase how we want this industry. We are still only a small club, but we even had 9 different offers from different organizations that wanted to equip us and see. And now we've chosen basically the most sustainable alternative out of them, not for financial reasons, but because we really believe in this process. And I think we need more of these organizations, clubs, but also people, individuals itself, who step out of the comfort zone, step out of the usual ways that they've known for years, and just don't get irritated by price or commitment in the first place, but just do it in the first place. And this is what is great fun for us as an organization, but also for me as an individual. And you can already see that my different workplaces are quite aligning itself, and it makes sense to combine the knowledge what we gathered in all of them.
Yeah, definitely. I was gonna. Yeah, it really is aligning kind of almost perfectly for you and those 3 lines of work. So that's really awesome. And I think, that map you were talking about, I think is definitely, obviously definitely useful for even sport clubs themselves. They, as you mentioned, more sustainable, more, like the catering companies that you mentioned, like, sport clubs can easily go and use that map to find organizations like that in the city as well. So, that even though it's not sport specific, sport organizations can easily leverage it for their own purpose and meeting their own targets and their goals and stuff, and starting it out when they're starting out on their fair trade kind of journey. So I think it's really interesting that you have all those different buckets of work, and that they're really aligning quite perfectly like that. So I think that's really awesome. And so I was going to ask for an example, but you already gave one with a local club that you were that you're working with, and how they are how they are starting this out, and interesting.
I can also give you, if you want to, another example from the professional field, which I find quite interesting, and I think can also be copied by different actors from every other country. So I'm not sure if you heard from the initiative from Feld in Fanshop, which means in English from field to fan shop.
I have not heard of it, no.
Yeah, it's a project by also Fairtrade Germany and also the development agency here in Germany, GIZ. And they made a project with 9 Bundesliga clubs, so from the men's football league. So they tried to come up with a sustainability initiative in the global south in India. And they made a trip to those cotton producers in India with the goal to afterwards create fair fan merchandise. So over the period of 3 years, basically, they told them, we are definitely going to buy the cotton for the next 3 years. So they, the producers, had the security that the bio cotton that they were producing is actually being bought by the clubs, because normally the demand is unfortunately getting a bit lower currently because of the price on the world market. So they had the security that these products are bought, and also, of course, a sort of best practice project working with Bundesliga clubs, which is still a milestone also for these producers, that they have direct contact from India towards Germany. And now, yeah, they have 9 clubs with this and already starting to produce this fair merchandise from 2023 onwards on. And I hope that, yeah, other clubs are joining this movement, because, yeah, even on the pitch you have rivalry, of course, and also in the sponsoring department, definitely, I understand that. But off the pitch, when it comes to merchandise, you should collaborate. It makes sense. It makes economical sense. It makes sense when it comes to knowledge. And this is a great example of how I see that the professional field is working way more closer together than it used to. I hear that in my conversations that I'm having also with clubs, with their merchandise directors, with the fan shop working force. And this is, yeah, something I would like to mention here, and hopefully it's getting recognized also not only in Germany but other countries in Europe, also worldwide.
I agree. I think it makes a lot of sense for organizations to be thinking about it, and I don't know, just from from me being here in Canada, I don't know if sport organizations here are really talking about it that much. At least I don't, maybe internally I don't hear them talking about it externally on the, in their, news releases and things like that. I don't hear really the conversations of that. It's definitely more focused on, some are talking about sustainability, their facilities and stuff, making sure it's used, using renewable energy. And they're starting to think about how they can, have more sustainable merchandise and team clothing and things like that. And so I think it's starting, but I think in terms of the fair trade piece itself, I think we are, at least here in Canada, maybe probably also in the US, a little bit behind what you're talking about is happening in Germany right now. So I think we have a long way to go, at least here. But I think this, it is the, I think the sustainability is the start of the conversation, which can lead to more deeper discussion on fair trade in sport. And I think that a lot of people often think that, sport is such a small industry and, it can't really have that big of an impact. But I think it, because of the platform that sport has, and sport taking these steps and showing these steps can be taken and actually completed successfully, I think it shows other industries and other areas of our society that it can be done, right? It sort of, serves as that platform to promote these ideas, to promote that organizations like sport and other can actually take part and tackle these issues themselves. So I think, that's what I was just thinking about that when you were talking there, and how some people might be thinking, why should sport be doing this? It's not that big, it's really not that big of a sector. It's still relatively small, but I think that, even if, as I was saying, sport takes the first steps, shows everybody else that can be done and how it can be done. And then I think it inspires more people to do it.
Let me give you a number when you say that the sport industry is not that big of a deal. Just for Germany alone, I've in my research, I found out that around, I think, 18.5 billion euros are spent every year by German for sports apparel. So 18.5 billion is a pretty big number also for Germany, because we have 86,000 clubs. We have almost 25 million members in Germany in sports clubs. And all of those clubs normally wear jerseys. Every season they have merchandise eventually. So basically in this regard, we can start the conversation from a grassroots level and become economically very, very significant. And that's why I also mean that fair trade is not only a label, it's more of a concept concept. It's another sort of economy, and obviously also strongly connected to degrowth. So this is important to say. It's not our goal now that we produce the same amount of clothes just fairly labeled, which is nice, but we also need less clothes, but these clothes fairly made. So this is basically the conversation that we trying to have. And it is obviously very difficult when you look into big brands without calling any names out here. But I think the crowd knows who we are talking about when we're talking about sports apparel. And they have up to 500 sub-suppliers in the supply chain. And no one can oversee such a big supply chain. What's happening in the cotton production? You know, what happens later in the manufacturing? What happens in the retailing? It's such a big step that we have to overtake. And probably we need a regulatory framework also for this. For example, when it comes to EU level, we have supply chain laws that are coming in now slowly, but at least they're coming in. And I think the sport world needs to face this question as a compliance issue and not as a nice to have or a sustainability initiative.
Yeah, no, and I agree. When you were talking there, it also reminded me of a number that I saw in Canada. So retail sales in terms of athletic footwear, sport equipment, and some other things amounts to 21.5 billion Canadian each year. So I didn't mean that the industry was small. I meant the specific sport teams were small in terms of like this individual team's impact and what they can really do. But yes, I know, I totally take your point. I totally agree that, you know, the entire, you know, sport athletic apparel is a huge industry. and I think there's a lot of opportunity for, you know, as I was saying, sport, and as you were saying, sport organizations to sort of lead that charge, talk about sport apparel, talk about footwear and things like that, and how we can make it more sustainable. So I totally agree with you. And I think it's really important for sport organizations to be thinking about more and more. So I guess I'll turn it back over to you and get, because I want to hear your thoughts on why you think sport organizations should be thinking about this more. Like, you know, I think you've talked about it a lot already a little in some of your answers, but you know, what is your case that sport organizations should be thinking about this starting yesterday?
Yeah, as I mentioned in my last phrase, basically, I think it should be more of a compliance issue. It should be a regulatory framework. And in my opinion, it will be coming either in EU legislation or also in country legislation. They're already talking about it, thinking about it. In Germany, also companies that have even almost less than 1,000 employers have now a risk assessment on human rights, for example. So this already comprises Borussia Dortmund or Bayern Munich as football clubs. So they see that they are faced now with these regulations, and you could become actually still a role model if you fulfill these criteria beforehand, or if you do an extra mile and to really look into your supply chain, look into your jerseys, have the conversations also with your fans, because a lot of fans are also asking themselves, can I, then we come into a social discussion, can I even buy each year a new shirt which costs more than 100 euros, for example? This is a social discussion we need to have as well. And then, of course, we have this merchandise that is produced for a cup title here, for a league title there. Then you have the Black Friday offers here, where they just throw out the stuff at every customer possible in there. And I think, sport needs to be part of a conversation changer. So the aspect that I mentioned is degrowth. You know, I don't see that currently in the sporting industry. We are going more into internationalization. We're going major sporting events are getting bigger and bigger. On the way, we're also forgetting somehow the grassroots sports organizations that I put my voice out very strongly, because I feel that they are really the cornerstone of the industry, not the professional field. So I think the concept of fair trade and also procurement can be the perfect conversation starter, especially when it comes to understand the difficulty currently in our globalized system. I give you one perfect example with the ball. The football is mostly produced, I think, over 80% in Pakistan, also basketballs and handballs. And the fair trade label basically enables them to say that no child labor is involved. And this is very easy to explain on our pitch here also in Berlin, that for the parents, that we don't want kids on our ground play with balls that were produced by kids. It's a very strong argument that we're having. And it showcases this big net of internationalization that we're having now. Everything what we do here, what we wear here in Germany or somewhere else in the global north, has somehow a connection to the global south. And then we are very, very easy on this connection of fair play on and off the pitch. And this is why I like the concept of fair trade so much, because mm-hmm. this is actually what we're all aiming for in the sports industry. What makes us work in the sport industry, because we believe in fair play, then we should also believe in fair pay.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think, you know, you know, just what you were saying about kind of the, you know, the grassroots community level sport, I think it's very undervalued in terms of what it actually means to the sport industry. You know, there's a lot more money in professional sports and at the national level and the international level than there is for our grassroots sports, which is unfortunate because that is really where, you know, most people play. Most people do not make it to the professional or international level. There is a big discussion in, at least in Canada right now, about, and I think there's more of a push from the sports sector itself to invest more in grassroots sports, because, you know, most of the funding does go to our national sport organizations which does not benefit the majority of people in Canada. And so I totally hear you when you're saying that we need to place more of a focus on the grassroots sports level and support them in initiatives like, you know, fair trade and things like that. Cause often they have the least resources to actually do projects like this. They're not, all these grassroots sport teams have so many participants and so many ways that we can engage people through, but there's nothing, there's no way for them to run these programs or to really think about these things often. So, I totally hear what you're saying. And I think it's interesting to think about because, I think it's interesting just because of how important it is and how little it really is talked about at the grassroots sport level. So, okay. Anton, I think that was a really great discussion, and I think we could keep talking about sport and fair trade, and especially, you know, I would ask you about your kind of ideas on that, you know, what you talked about it for degrowth in sport. I'm not, I don't know if that's necessarily what we need to talk about right now in sport and fair trade podcast, but I'm interested to know about your thoughts, but I'll leave that for another day. But I will ask you my final question that I ask everybody, and it is, what do you believe the power of sport is?
Yeah, coming back maybe to our last argument, just to give you another very cool example from the ground. At Inter, my club, FC Nazionale, we have now 12-year-olds who can say why a fair trade ball is better than a non-ethically produced football. And this is beautiful how you combine education and sports from the ground on. I mean, they will always have this for now on. They've trained to do this, and they have knowledge on and off the pitch, which is one of the most beautiful things you can actually think of. And because, and I also believe in that, the sports club and the grassroots organization, they are so important for your biography. You can do so much, and that's why I believe so much in the power of sport. And these kids come 2 to 3 times per week for training, then they go to the game on the weekend. They come there voluntarily, not like in school where you have to go. So it's beautiful to combine the sport with the educational part, see them growing professionally but also mentally off the pitch. And this is why I spend so much time working in this field, first as a volunteer, now also on the professional level. And that's why I hope that so many more people are getting engaged in the sector, because I'm not sure how it is in Canada, but in Germany, we are still lacking a little bit of voluntary commitment currently. And I think the beautiful power of sports is only seen when you are part of a club, when you are part of the conversation in there, and it's so worth it. So go for it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Anton. And thank you so much for the work that you're doing in Germany. I think it's really, really important, and hopefully others will walk away from hearing this conversation and think about how, you know, they can think about more fair trade in their own sport organization. So, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you once again to Anton for coming on the podcast and talking about sport and fair trade. So really, really enjoyed this conversation with Anton, and I think it was extremely valuable to talk about this on the podcast. And I hope that everybody listening agrees and found this conversation enlightening and walking away with ideas about how you could introduce sport and fair trade into your own sport organizations. So my key takeaways from this episode are, firstly, I find myself thinking back to the conversation we had about the sport and nature framework, and how they are providing resources for sport organizations to start this work. And so similarly, Anton talked about how they're providing resources to help sport organizations to start their journey into fair trade. And I think this is so vital. A lot of sport organizations do not have the resources to do this on their own. They don't have the expertise. They can't hire the expertise because they have limited funding resources. So having resources where they're able to go to read about it, to find first steps, to ask questions, I think it's all really important. And I love to hear it that Anton and this network that he's working with is doing just that. So my second key takeaway is that the sport industry is already thinking about its environmental footprint in terms of procurement of equipment. So I see often sport teams and clubs and athletic wear saying that their jerseys, their footwear is made out of recycled materials. So you can often go to a retail store and find workout clothes that are made out of recycled plastic bottles, for example. Sport industry is already thinking about environmental impact. But I'm just thinking it's not that big of a step to start thinking about the social impacts of the sport procurement process as well. So I think that we do have this ethical mandate to consider these in our systems. Because the sport industry just has such a big platform, it does reach so many people. We can start these conversations and say that we, in our procurement process for these jerseys, as Anton was talking about, in our procurement process for these jerseys, we can also think about the social impact on the laborers who put their time and effort into making them. So I think it's important to think about taking those steps, and it's not that big of a step to go from just thinking about environmental to thinking about the social aspects as well. And I think that the sport industry is well positioned to start doing that more and more. So that brings me to the end of another episode of the Sports for Social Impact podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk with you next time.